Radio, I'm Pam Husso. Saying the stakes couldn't be higher, Hillary Clinton is urging her supporters to register to vote.
We want everybody in Philadelphia, everybody across Pennsylvania, to be part of a great victory in November and then the future that we're going to build together.
Clinton speaking moments ago at a high school. Donald Trump's campaign is about to enter a new phase. Fox News confirming he'll receive his first classified intelligence briefing tomorrow in New York. The governor of Louisiana says saving lives remains the priority. At least 8 people have died in epic flooding.
Individuals being good neighbors have rescued well over 20,000 people thus far across Louisiana and well over 1,000 pets.
Governor John Bel Edwards, with more than 40,000 homes impacted, shelters are packed.
Got a lot of people who may not be able to get back into their homes. So what will be the next step for temporary housing? And then the long-term goals the governor has, getting schools open, getting businesses back in operation.
FEMA Chief Craig Fugate. In addition to the threat posed by ISIS, U.S. officials say up to 100,000 fighters backed by Iran are on the ground in Iraq. The concern is that even if ISIS falls, the group could be replaced by another anti-American force that fuels sectarian violence. The fight against ISIS has Iran and Russia working more closely.
The Kremlin has never used another country in the Middle East for its campaign inside Syria. The fact that Russian warplanes took off from a base inside Iran marks a major change in Syria's civil war and highlights the highest level of cooperation between Tehran and Russia.
Fox's Jessica Gallagher, the ongoing conflict in Syria, the subject of a phone call between Secretary of State John Kerry and his Russian counterpart. Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
Peek-a-boo, peek-a-boo, smile.
Smile, buddy.
Come on, smile. Oh, honey, he's still not smiling.
Maybe he's not a smiler.
Yeah, maybe he's just not a happy baby.
Maybe he's just being a boy. You know how boys are.
Or maybe he's teething. Oh, poor baby, I think his gums hurt.
Maybe he's just tired.
Or maybe his tummy hurts. He didn't eat that much.
Maybe he's not ticklish.
You think maybe he's scared of the dog?
Maybe he'll outgrow it. Maybe it's a phase. Maybe he just doesn't like smiling.
Maybe he has autism, and we can definitely do something to help.
Maybe is all you need to find out more about autism. No big, joyful smiles by 6 months is one early sign. Learn the others at autismspeaks.org/signs or see a doctor today for an autism screening. The sooner it's diagnosed, the better. And it can make a lifetime of difference. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
One day after being convicted of abusing her powers, Pennsylvania's attorney general is resigning. Kathleen Kane has been under increasing pressure from the governor and lawmakers. Yesterday, she was convicted of all of the counts against her, including perjury, obstruction, and official oppression. Jail time is possible. The motive is still under investigation, but people who live in the New York City community where a mosque leader and a friend were gunned down over the weekend are drawing their own conclusions.
This is definitely a hate crime. There is no reason for this imam to be killed. He's a very innocent person.
Charges against the suspect, Oscar Morrell, have been upgraded to first-degree murder. Months before the Charleston church shooter faces trial, some attorneys in South Carolina want jury information sealed.
The federal case against Dylan Roof isn't set to start until November, but this week attorneys submitted proposed questionnaires for potential jurors. Both the defense and prosecution say they also want those questions to be kept confidential. The joint motion asks for documents to be sealed because public disclosure could affect their ability to see an impartial jury. 22-year-old Dylan Roof faces the death penalty when he goes to trial on a number of charges, including hate crimes, for the shooting deaths of 9 black parishioners at Charleston's Emmanuel AME Church last year. Up to 1,500 potential jurors could be summoned in this federal murder trial. Roof also faces the death penalty in the state murder trial set to begin in early 2017. Monica Ricks, Fox News.
It's now 20% contained, a wildfire in Northern California.
Crews are still assessing the extent of the damage and evacuation orders remain in effect. But crews on the ground and in the air are making progress, holding the fire to 4,000 acres.
Fox's Claudia Cowan in Lower Lake, a local man is charged with arson. Pam Husso, Fox News Radio.
Welcome to What Matters in North Carolina. Happy Tuesday to you. My name is Mark Shiver. Glad to have you listening to the program today. As always, if you'd like to participate, you can call us at 919-747-9421. You can follow us on Twitter at What Matters NC, and you can hit me up there at Mark Shiver. Well, the news sort of got out of the bag over the weekend. I'm not sure that he planned it that way, but Representative Mike Hager has decided to step aside from his seat as a member of the North Carolina House of Representatives. And joining us now to talk about that and some of the things that he feels good about accomplishing over the past 6 years is Representative or former Representative Mike Hager. Welcome to What Matters in North Carolina.
Thank you. I think I'm good until midnight, maybe. I'm not sure.
Okay, well, you'll always be Representative Hager to me, but thanks for joining us on the program today, sir. And let me just say right out of the gate here that I believe strongly that you have served not only your constituents in your district, but this state well. And so we appreciate all that you've done for North Carolina.
Thank you, Mark. I greatly appreciate that. You know, those kind words mean a lot to me.
Well, and it's, you know, even better because you know I mean it. So trying to blow smoke or anything like that. So have you been sitting on this decision for a while, or is this something that you just started thinking about recently?
I've been pondering this, I guess, for especially since the short session started. You know, looking at kind of, you know, I think everybody that gets into politics at some point thinks, okay, when is this going to end? When do I need to move out? When do I feel like, you know, that I've used the time here to the best I could do, and then now it's time to let somebody else do this. So yeah, I've been pondering this for a while as pressure in the family, you know, with my parents gets a little bit more intense, or economic pressures to have to leave and go and get a job to pay the bills and live as those mounts, you have to start looking at the dates.
Well, that certainly is understandable. They don't pay you guys a whole lot to come down there and serve in the General Assembly. So how do you feel like your colleagues have reacted? I know that Speaker Moore sent out a statement thanking you for your service and advancing the Republican agenda for the betterment of North Carolina. Do you feel like your colleagues are going to take the news well or have taken it well?
I do. I think it surprised some of them. A lot of my close allies down there, my colleagues, they really kind of knew what was getting ready to happen, you know, once I started talking about it. But, you know, I know in the Senate's the same as the House. When you're there, you feel like it's a family. You feel like you all go through these tough times together, which tends to bond you together pretty strong. And yeah, we may have fights within the family like every family does, but we always come back together. So it's I guess, you know, it's like losing part of the family. It really is a bittersweet time for me because I tell you, there are a lot of men and women in the General Assembly that are there to do the right thing. They're there to make North Carolina better, and they sacrifice every day they're in session to do it. And, you know, and I commend those folks. So, yeah, it's bittersweet. I think most folks received it well. I'm not, you know, irreplaceable. You know, there will be somebody else to step in my role and do a fantastic job. There'll be somebody from my district to step into my job there and do a fantastic job. I just want to help those folks transition. I want to help North Carolina do better. And I hope the 6 years I was there, we made North Carolina a better state.
Well, I would say that you have, and I'm sure that there are many who would agree. Representative Mike Hager joining us here on What Matters in North Carolina. Now, it seems like, Representative Hager, there might be something in the water down there, yourself and Monday, Representative Rick Catlin from New Hanover has stepped down, and we saw some folks in the Senate, Senator Apodaca and Rucho and others. What's going on down there?
Well, I think, you know, from the transition from Democrat to Republican in 2011, you know, those six years we've been there, those three terms, have been just a hard-fought, almost 24-hour a day, certainly full-time job for me as in leadership. And I'll tell you, it wears you out after a while. 6 years of being in leadership, 6 years of leading the charge for good conservative values takes a toll on you. Remember, I live almost 4 hours away, and I'm there every week as majority leader, and I'm running, helping campaigns, and I'm raising money. And so I'm away from home more than I'm at home. So eventually that wears on a body, wears on my 53-year-old body. And you start to have to look for the future. You know, and those guys you all talked about, are my age or older. So at some point you have to say, okay, I've got to prepare for retirement. I've got to prepare for maybe taking it easy a little bit, because the last 6 years have been kind of tough.
Well, you certainly are down there a good bit of the time, and the 2015 long session, I think, went longer than anybody had anticipated, and certainly longer than anybody wanted. So I can certainly understand how those types of things, being away from your family, do take a toll. We're talking with Representative Mike Hager, House Majority Leader, who has decided to step down from his seat. And can you give us any breaking news, Representative Hager? I've heard a lot of rumors about what you're going to do. I haven't seen anything in print. Can you break the news here for us?
Well, the first thing, you know, everybody asks, you know, why? There must be some nefarious reason. There must be some covert operation. There must be something that went wrong for you to want to do this. And it's not really that. It's just, you know, my parents live an hour and 45 minutes, almost 2 hours from me. My dad's 82, stroke in the last couple years, cancer issue, and my mother doesn't drive. So the major reason, my main priority, is to be able to spend more time with them, be able to take care of them, help take care of their house that they still live in, and help them economically. And then the other issue, the second priority, is of course is to go out there and make a living to where, you know, I can take a vacation every so often. Since I've been in General Assembly, I haven't had time for a vacation. I haven't had time to take some time for myself, some time with my children, some time with my parents. So I don't have any breaking news yet. Maybe in the future, in the near future, I may have. There's some opportunities that are starting to come to light, and I don't want to jinx them right now, but I'll certainly be able to let you know as soon as I know.
Well, we appreciate that. And you have been a pretty vigorous voice in the General Assembly when it comes to the renewable energy portfolio standard and subsidies and that sort of thing, tax credits for so-called clean or renewable energy. And do you fear now that stepping aside that there's going to be a void left there to carry on that battle?
You know, Mark, I don't, because you have the likes of Chris Millis and Jeff Collins and Justin Burr down there. You have a lot of folks that understand why renewable energy is bad. They have a great understanding of what I call math, to know that if you have to charge more for energy, that's so inflationary to everything we do in this state. They understand that. They understand that they need to hold the line on no more tax credits, especially if it's target tax credits like renewable tax credits, like the film tax credit, if you remember several years ago. You know, those are the things that I think I'm the most proud of, that we were able to stop. You know, it's not the fact that only that we can reduce the amount of money we take from our taxpayers, but we have to spend what little we take very wisely. And giving target tax credits to people that are already millionaires and billionaires is not the way to spend taxpayer money.
Well, you know, what's interesting, Representative Hager, is that the left says that the tax reform that the General Assembly has passed over the last couple of years is intended, you know, to be tax breaks for the wealthy and all of that. And I just don't see that. I think when you lower the personal income tax rate for everybody, when you raise the standard deduction for everybody, and fiscal research told me one time that close to 3/4 of the people in the state are taking the standard deduction. That means they're not itemizing. That means they don't have a lot of money and have made a lot of charitable giving and have a lot of interest to deduct. That sounds like tax reform for regular folks to me. It certainly doesn't sound like tax breaks just for the wealthy.
Well, I mean, when you look at anybody in this state, whether you're wealthy or you're below the poverty level, or you're in the middle, if you know that eventually that the first 17.5 of whatever I make is non-taxable, that's money that the state's not going to take any part of. Then you look at a lot of people. You know, a lot of people that aren't rich, we're still paying above 5.5% tax rate, that have to have their tax rate lower. Simplification of the tax. Now we're a flat tax state. All the income that everybody is doing with those with that extra money by creating businesses, by buying things made in North Carolina, by spending and upping the amount of sales tax dollars we get. All that money back to the economy helps everybody. So I discount that by saying, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats. And whether you're saving money as a billionaire or you're saving money for someone that makes $50,000, it's still saving money for that person.
Absolutely. Our guest, Representative Mike Hager, here now. The House has, as we mentioned a moment ago, several have decided not to continue, and also in the Senate. How do you think that's going to affect the agenda and the ability of folks like Speaker Moore and over in the Senate, obviously, President Pro Tem Berger? It's going to be tough for them to get up and running again because, you know, they've had most of the same team now for 6 years, and all of a sudden, you know, it's like trading ball players. You got to get people used to your system before you can start winning. Do you think that's going to be an easy transition with some of the new players in the House and in the Senate, or you think it's going to be okay?
I think it'll be okay. And I say that because Senator Berger will still be there. Speaker Moore will still be there. And those are the guys that kind of set the philosophy. You know, we don't know what's going to happen during the election, which will probably has the potential to upset the apple cart more than the retirements do. So I think until the election's over, you're really not going to be able to tell what the lineup looks like. And you're not going to be able to tell, especially in the House, whether you have more moderates or more conservatives and how that affects the agenda. I think after, you know, mid-November, we should be able to tell kind of where that's going to go.
Representative Mike Hager joining us here for a few moments on What Matters in North Carolina. You know, yourself, you know, not to shine the spotlight on you too brightly, but you had kind of an impressive run. You were a freshman and you were leader of the caucus, majority whip after that, and then majority leader. How were you able to move up so quickly from freshman to leading the whole House Republican caucus in such a short time?
You know, Mark, I tell you, this is a great state and a great country. Let me just digress just a little bit. You know, my family grew up, mother and father both grew up in Texel Mill Village. My dad in Bessemer City, North Carolina. My mother in Gaston County, North Carolina, Gastonia. My mother has an eighth grade education, had to quit school to take care of the other kids. My dad barely got out of high school. Neither one of them a college degree. But in this world and today in North Carolina, their son can be majority leader of the House with an engineering degree. You know, that's what this country's about, and that's what this state's about. And that's what we've got to promote for folks to do better, to move forward, to get more education, to get better jobs. You know, when the transition came in 2011, I was lucky enough to be able to step in. Senator Tillis put his faith in me to help come into the House and lead the 23 freshmen that we had. And then that void is just, you know, it was a whole turnover and created such an opportunity for leadership. Those folks that were willing to step up, and I was one of them willing to step up, had the opportunity to either sink or swim. And then working hard and doing the right things and trying to drive the agenda are marks of leadership and making sure your caucus is good and leading the right way. I think that really did. It caused us to have that opportunity. It's not that I'm that good. It's just the opportunity was there, and I think some of us saw that opportunity and seized it.
Well, you certainly have done an excellent job. And Representative Hager, any parting thoughts about the judicial activism that has upset the apple cart here in North Carolina as regards the voter ID legislation, the state House and Senate district maps, maps in Wake County? It's like before long, the 4th District three judge panel is going to be setting our speed limits, I believe.
Well, you know, I believe there is such a thing as the 10th Amendment to the Constitution, even though the federal government, these active judges have kind of torn that piece out of our Constitution and thrown it away. It's up to us to keep demanding that be put back in and that be adhered to. Now, it's unfortunate that we have judges that want to be part of the legislature. If they are, then they need to run for the legislature. Instead of trying to make the laws, that's what we do. And instead of trying to be partisan political, they need to really look at what we're trying to do. Know that we've had a lot of these things already cleared, pre-cleared in the voter ID case and the voter ID issue with the Justice Department, Obama's Justice Department. So these good judges have gone beyond the liberal Justice Department. So I think we're going to have to continue to put pressure on these folks. We're going to have to continue to get the right person in there. They're naming these judges. We need to elect the right president to make sure our judges are held accountable. and are at least look unbiased at the laws we pass. But at the end of the day, you know, we are a sovereign state. We should be able to enact laws that our people think we need to enact, not to be struck down at the whim just because we're a Republican legislature and those activist judges are liberal. It's a sad day, I believe.
Well, I appreciate your comments. And Representative Hager, I wish you all the best. You've been a good friend of the show, and I know if we ever need you, we'll certainly believe that you would come on and give us whatever input we seek from you. But I, again, with all my heart, mean that you have served well. We appreciate your service to the state, and we wish you all the best in the future with your family and your endeavors, whatever they may be.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care. Representative Mike Hager on his way out the door of the North Carolina House of Representatives, joining us here on What Matters in North Carolina. He was not ready to, quote, jinx whatever opportunities he has going. I would tend to believe that he's probably got something lined up. You don't just dive into the water without having, a safety net there, so to speak. I've heard several things. His legislative, Lindsey Dowling, works in his office, responded to a question from media, is he going to be lobbying at the state level? And she said no. Now, I've heard, and I don't know if it's true or not, but he might be doing lobbying on a federal level, but we'll have to wait and see. But he brings up a good point, and, you know, it's a really, really interesting dynamic because nobody wants to vote themselves a raise unless it's, you know, Congress and they just don't care how much money they spend. But the fact of the matter is that here in North Carolina, the House and Senate folks, they don't make very much money at all for being in the legislature. They get $13,000 and change as an annual salary, I guess you would call that, to be in the House or the Senate. They both make the same. They all get a per diem, which I think is $125, $124 and change per day, something like that. And then they get mileage. So if you live in Wake County, you're not going to be able to get reimbursed for mileage. But folks like Representative Hager, driving 4 hours one way, and, you know, you got Senator Apodaca. He was driving all the way from Asheville, and those that are way out in the mountains or even at the coast, Senator Bill Cook up there in Dare County. Long drives for these guys. And most of the people that work in the General Assembly that I know or knew when I worked there, they were either self-sustaining business people like farmers or lawyers, attorneys, that they could be gone essentially 4 days a week and their business would continue without their, you know, physical presence. Or they were retired and had, income coming in that they could afford to be away from home for 4 or 5 days a week. Look, those guys roll into town on Monday afternoon. They typically have a session on Monday night, and then they have session Tuesday and Wednesday, and they normally are busy literally all day on Tuesday and Wednesday with committee meetings and session and what have you. And then on Thursdays, they typically have a morning session, and by, 12, 1 o'clock, it's a ghost town over there again. It was always so funny when I worked there. I would tell people, being at the General Assembly during session is like being at the mall on Black Friday. It is a absolute zoo over there. There's lobbyists and people wanting to get, you know, their agenda, their cause, their concern in front of their member of the General Assembly, their senator or their House member. And the halls are crowded and the elevators are jam-packed and the snack bar has got this interminable line. I mean, it's just crazy down there. It literally is like being at some type of, you know, public event where it's just crowded and all of a sudden around 11:30, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock on Thursdays, it's like being on the mall or being at the mall, but not on Black Friday, but about 8 in the morning when they're not open and the only people there are a few senior citizen mall walkers. You know what I mean? It's crazy. It happens in the blink of an eye. You go from pandemonium and just craziness to, wow, it's a ghost town. And it's an interesting dynamic. And it was a lot of fun working there. But the guys that work there, the representatives and the senators, they don't get paid a lot. Now, the Speaker of the House and the President pro tem of the Senate, they make significantly more money, and they have a lot more money for their staff. Also, the members of the House and Senate, in addition to the $13,000 in the per diem, I think they get somewhere in the neighborhood of $500 a month, maybe a little more to do office things with. And I know some of those guys just pocket that as well. So really, it's not as bad as it may seem, because by the time you count per diem and $13,000 and change, and then if you pocket the $500 a month, you're talking about, what's that? That's $6,000 a year, or whenever they're in session, let's say 9 months, $4,500. You can get up to around $30,000 by the time you add it all up. But still, you know, if you've got a family and you're driving a long way, that's not enough money to live on. And so for most folks. And so Representative Hager, I meant that. I think he has served well. He has been a conservative voice over there in the House. You know, we love Speaker Moore. He is a true friend of this program. He will come on and graciously. But, you know, he's the top guy over there, and he's got to work at building consensus. But Representative Hager has really held true to his conservative philosophy, particularly in the area of solar and renewable energy. And we appreciate that he has not wavered in that regard. Now, I'm not sure what's up with Representative Catlin. I wish I knew how to pronounce his name. But anyway, C-A-T-L-I-N, like Larry Gatlin, the guitar player, Rick Catlin. I hope that's right. But anyway, in the WECT story from Monday, it says that he resigned on Monday, and he announced last year he would not seek a third term, and he plans to focus more on his engineering firm, Catlin Engineers and Scientists, after his friend CEO Jeff Becken passed away unexpectedly. So, you know, Representative Hager said, well, you know, Senator Berger is going to be there and Speaker Moore. But I'm going to tell you what, folks, it's going to be different down there. It's going to be a different, much different dynamic. And if, you know, somehow the Republicans are not able to maintain a large majority like they have now, it's going to be very interesting to see how Speaker Moore and Senator Berger are able to navigate the waters when they don't have, or if they don't have, a significant majority. Senator Berger is, you know, very much in charge of the Senate. I think everyone will tell you that. There's often been leaks out of the House from some of the private caucus meetings that they've had, but you never hear a peep out of the Senate. I mean, those folks are definitely very well disciplined in their caucus meetings. And what is a caucus? A caucus is the members of the party. So if you hear the Republican caucus is meeting, that means the Republican members. The Democrat caucus means the Democrat House members or Senate members. And so Senator Berger will have to deal with finding a new rules chairman. Senator Apodaca, obviously, you know, the perfect rules chairman, able to be nice and yet be very, very firm, you know, and you just knew whether or not, you know, you were going to get your bill passed. Was all in the hands of Senator Apodaca. I mean, that was just the bottom line. But that's what a rules chairman is supposed to do. And so the Senate will be different, the House will be different, but we'll keep you up to date on all of it. You know, it's not that far away. It's, what, 5 months? And I know our producer, Matt Calder, can't wait to be going down to the General Assembly and writing about all of that again. Well, we're going to take a break for your Fox News. Right now, you're listening to What Matters in North Carolina on the Freedom Action Network. And coming up, we are going to talk about Anita Hill. What?
Radio. I'm Pam Puso. Donald Trump is about to become privy to classified information. Fox's Jared Halpern explains live from Washington.
Now, Donald Trump will get his first classified intelligence briefing tomorrow, expected at a secure location at the FBI's New York field office. Sources tell Fox News the first presidential candidate briefing can run an hour or longer. It's led by the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. The campaign will work with that office on coordinating additional sessions and work on topics of interest to the candidate in areas of importance to the intelligence community. Security clearances not required. Candidates qualify because they have secured the nomination of a major party. Pam.
Thanks, Jared. Trump is in Milwaukee, where he plans to hold a roundtable with law enforcement.
This event was planned before all of the disturbances happened surrounding that police-involved shooting in Milwaukee. So Donald Trump tonight is going to shift gears a little bit. He's going to focus very much on law and order in this speech.
Fox's John Roberts. Despite topping polls in several battleground states, Hillary Clinton says she's not taking anybody anywhere for granted.
Hillary Clinton's campaign reminded people today that they want to register 3 million voters across the country, including African Americans, Latinos, and millennials. They also said that in Pennsylvania, the registration deadline is October 11th.
Fox's Jennifer Griffin in Philadelphia. The State Department says it's unfortunate but not surprising that Russia is using an airbase in Iran to launch airstrikes in Syria. As the extent of the cooperation is assessed, the department says a deal between the U.S. and Moscow is a work in progress.
We're continuing to have those conversations. We continue to pursue that goal.
Spokesman Mark Toner. Another gold medal for American gymnast Simone Biles. She captured the floor exercise title in Rio. Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
Real experience, real insight.
We're following this explosive story.
Nothing gets by Greta. Then.
This is all BS. What was that all about?
There's no spin and no question. O'Reilly dominates. Plus, smart, sharp, and cutting edge.
It's the news of the day, but with a little heat.
Megan delivers. And Sean seals the deal with fearless talk.
What part of that are you understanding?
Most watched. Most trusted. Fox News Channel.
There's more to Fox News Radio than meets the ear. Go behind the headlines and join the conversation on the hottest stories of the day on the Fox News Radio Facebook page. Be a part of the Fox News Radio Facebook fan community. Post comments and tell us your opinions. See behind-the-scenes photos and videos and post your reactions to the stories that matter to you. Click the like button on Facebook and connect with breaking news and features like Fox in the Fast Lane, House Call for Help, and more. Go to Facebook.com/Fox News Radio.
The number of dead in Louisiana climbing to at least 10 as high water rescue efforts continue.
You not only have a lot of local first responders, of course, on the ground working round the clock here, but also the National Guard has been deployed. We've seen them, in addition to the U.S. Coast Guard, using air assets to pluck people from their homes surrounded by fast rising floodwaters. In fact, some 30,000 people have been rescued here since Friday.
Fox's Casey Stiegel in Baton Rouge, some 40,000 homes have been inundated with floodwaters. Moisture is desperately needed in Northern California, where crews are making progress against a wildfire, containment at 20%. This comes as authorities make an arrest.
Damon Pelchick is in jail facing 17 counts of arson, which many locals say could help explain why this area has seen so many major wildfires over the past couple of years.
Fox's Claudia Cowan in Lower Lake. Reaction from Donald Trump to the release of more than a dozen detainees from the Guantanamo Bay prison. In a press release, Trump says the Clinton-Obama plan to close the facility will harm America's national security.
The Pentagon says 15 prisoners were sent to the United Arab Emirates in the biggest release from the Guantanamo Bay detention center in Cuba under President Obama's watch. Only 61 detainees now remain at Gitmo, down from nearly 800 during the post-9/11 years. The latest batch of released prisoners had mostly been held without charge for some 14 years. Closing the prison at Guantanamo Bay was one of President Obama's campaign promises in 2008. In Washington, Rachel Sutherland, Fox News.
Late word that the FBI has provided a House committee with documents related to its probe of Hillary Clinton's emails. Fox News confirming the materials do contain classified material. On Wall Street, the Dow down 53. Pam Puso, Fox News Radio.
Welcome back to What Matters in North Carolina. My name is Mark Shiver. Glad to have you listening to the program today. If you missed our segment just now with outgoing House Majority Leader Representative Mike Hager here in North Carolina, feel free to check it out. You can always listen to the show as a podcast. Just go to freedomactionnetwork.com or find us in the iTunes and Google Play stores as well. So, do you remember, and if you're young, you won't remember, like my son never saw this, but I remember well the scene of Anita Hill testifying and bringing forth all of these horrific allegations against Supreme Court judge nominee, justice nominee Clarence Thomas, and talking about pubic hair on top of Pepsi-Cola cans and his inappropriate words and his inappropriate actions and blah, blah, blah. And I say blah, blah, blah because she was later discredited greatly. But in 2016, the truth rarely matters to folks on the left, and HBO has decided to dig this up and repackage it and once again try to besmirch the name of Justice Clarence Thomas. To talk with us about this and to make comparisons between someone who was victimized by then President or former President Bill Clinton, Juanita Broderick, is Mark Pauletta. He's worked as a White House counsel, congressional investigator. Mark, welcome to What Matters in North Carolina.
Mark, thanks for having me on.
Well, we'll be saying Mark a lot here, I guess. But, you know, and in no way was I trying to belittle Anita Hill as a person, but her allegations did not have a whole lot of veracity. And yet HBO is propping her up once again here years later as what's the motivation here? Are they just trying to draw the attention off of Hillary Clinton and her husband, or are they just, you know, bored, or why are they bringing all this up?
Great question, because the movie, which showed it premiered in April, didn't do very well. A lot of people did not watch it. But I just think it's, you know, more and more this 25-year war on Justice Thomas. You know, he's a black conservative, and that's anathema to the left. And I think that it's a shame. And when you look at the comparisons between Juanita Broderick and other women who accused Bill Clinton of, you know, worse things or as bad things, there's just no comparison. You know, Anita Hill's story never added up, from the get-go. And you know, the American people watched those hearings, Mark, as you did, as I participated in them, right? Everyone watched them. There was no filter of the media. It was everyone got to sort of take their own measure. And by the end of those hearings, Mark, it was 3-1, 2-1, 3-1 in favor of Clarence Thomas, believing that he told the truth and that Anita Hill did not tell the truth.
Well, and that was pretty fascinating, wasn't it? Because I remember, and I was a lot younger then, even though I wasn't young by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, watching that, I felt really bad, and I just kind of had it played out in my mind that he was, you know, not going to come out of those hearings unscathed, you know, listening to her tales of his alleged inappropriate behavior, but... you're right. He made it through.
He made it through. But again, in her story, it's always, you know, it's important to kind of go back. I've set up a website called confirmationbiased.com. It was kind of keying off the movie. So it's B-I-A-S-E-D, confirmationbiased.com. It runs through everything, Mark, in terms of why her story never added up, why every single witness that, you know, testified for her, and there weren't many, you know, it didn't add up. If you recall, Thomas had been through three confirmation proceedings with FBI background checks on each of them. None of this had ever come up. Anita Hill remains the only person who, under oath, and specifically with respect to the pornography charges, as you said, no one has ever said that, either under oath or otherwise, with Thomas in the workplace. So it's, you know, 12 women testified, former coworkers. Not a single coworker testified for Anita Hill, to support Anita Hill. She gave the FBI names of two women who she said would back it up. They flatly refuted her claims, and one of them actually testified for Justice Thomas. So there was a woman who the movie had Angela Wright, who allegedly corroborated Hill's story. She was completely not credible. She chose not to testify. HBO lied about that aspect of it. And her story never added up. She had lots of credibility problems, which if we had a long time, I could walk you through. But, you know, the fact that the left keeps going back to that when charges of, you know, from people from, you know, Juanita Broderick, Kathleen Willey, the ones that are in the news today, what they want to talk about is the Anita Hill one.
Well, and our guest, Mark Pauletta here, you can find him on Twitter at Mark, P-A-O-L-E-T-T-A, and talking about the HBO and others trying to continue to demean and belittle and discredit and call question into the ethics and character of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. And, you know, those type of things, I don't know how if you're old enough to remember Watergate, but those types of hearings are, at least they used to be anyway, where they were just very dramatic television. I remember Sam Ervin and John Dean, you know, and, you know, I was a kid coming home from school, and there would be on 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I had no idea at that time what it was all about. But the Anita Hill hearings were no less compelling. And the sad thing, Mark, about this is that a guy, if he's accused, he's guilty, you know, and Justice Thomas had to overcome a lot to maintain his character and credibility and reputation.
And, you know, not a single woman before or since, okay, other than Anita Hill, has charged what she charged. And so when you look at these people like Clinton, like Cosby, like a lot of other people, there's always, you know, a string of people that are victims. What I found shocking, Mark, was that 1998, Anita Hill went on Meet the Press and vigorously defended. I kind of viewed her as Bill Clinton's de facto defense counsel because she was so vigorous. But she attacked Kathleen Willey. She attacked Paula Jones. She belittled Paula Jones when, in fact, right, a couple weeks or a couple months later, Clinton settles with Paula Jones for $850,000. Anita Hill then goes on to trash, really viciously in my view, Monica Lewinsky, you know, a young intern who got caught up in, you know, just a terrible exploitation by President Clinton. And then when her name came up in this, you know, was ripped apart by the Clinton camp. But to go back to your point, I agree with you. I think that unfortunately, when it depends on your politics. You know, if you're on the left, and Anita Hill admitted this in this Meet the Press interview. She literally said there is a double standard and that you need to take into account larger issues other than just personal conduct. And so, unfortunately, I wrote a piece yesterday that was published in the National Review online that talks about the fact that I think that the way the left has treated sexual harassment has actually hurt the progress of it in terms of stamping it out. And I include among the folks who have harmed it is Anita Hill. And the people who use it for a political weapon, you know, they cover up Bill Clinton. They cover up lots of other people. Bob Packwood is another perfect example. Guy who was a senator, a Republican. Okay, so this isn't a, you know, partisan issue. It's a political, liberal, conservative issue. Bob Packwood was a serial sex harasser, right? But he was a key vote for Hillary Clinton's health care bill. And so when she was told that women were being harassed by Packwood, her best friend diary reflects that she said, those women need to stop whining. I need Packwood on my healthcare vote. This is back in 1993. So, you know, to me, you know, a lot of people in the women's groups, in, you know, feminist movements have used it as a political weapon. And that's why we still read about these terrible stories that, you know, that where sexual harassment is going on for years at a clip. And why, you know, why is that? I think this has contributed to it.
Well, absolutely. And our guest, Mark Pauletta, he is joining us to talk about some of the goings-on in the mainstream media that obviously reflect blatant bias. And this is probably off topic, but you're immersed, so to speak, in things that have to do with the media. So I'll ask you this. One thing that really puzzles me is what it is about the liberal ideology and the thought process of the left that is so attractive to the media. Do you got any idea?
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, I think it's progressivism is the idea that we know better than the bumpkins out there, right? And the rules don't apply to us. So we're going to try and control you, right? We know you're not smart enough. You're not informed enough to make the decisions for yourself. We are the ones who know best for you. And so we're going to centralize this power, and we're going to sort of, you know, put these rules in place that sort of make decisions for you. That's what I think at the end of the day. And when some of these rules catch up with them, they are so nobly intentioned that the rules don't apply to them, that we're better than the rules, and our intentions will serve the better purpose. And so that's what I think motivates a lot of liberals as to why they want to control your life and tell you what to do.
Well, it certainly is an interesting phenomenon. My thought is that it's kind of stupid, because if they really had their way, and boy, am I off topic now, but I'll just tell you this for free. if they really had their way, I mean, the ultimate end of liberal ideology is socialism and communism, where freedom of the press is non-existent, and yet these guys cling to it like it's a life raft. And so
Mark, I don't, you know, in terms of freedom of the press, when you look at what happens on college campuses, right, and not trying to debate, but trying to silence, right, all of these speech codes are really, they don't, you know, they're trying to, I think Hillary Clinton talked about, you know, trying to sort of essentially amend the First Amendment. I think you can question what their definition of a free press is, that you can't even raise certain arguments, or you shall be shunted, you shall be ostracized, you're not even allowed to talk about that. You're not allowed to talk about climate change, as to whether it's, you know, what's causing it, or whether the solutions that the left is propping up, again, to control our lives, is real or not. You're not even allowed to have those discussions. I think that's chilling. I don't think that's sort of consistent with the First Amendment. And I think our founders would be shocked that liberals today are taking the positions they do.
Oh, absolutely. That whole thing, defending yourself, your right to have freedom of speech, freedom of religion, it sort of ties into this notion that a man, if he is accused of sexual impropriety, that he is already guilty, and he's got to, you know, prove himself not to have done those things. And we were talking to a guest yesterday about how in a lot of these free speech issues and regular freedom issues, people are having to litigate themselves out of trouble when the very constitution that our country is supposed to be governed by, you know, assures us of freedom of speech and freedom of religion. And yet we're seeing more and more cases where those rights are being trampled over, and people are having to go, you know, to get attorneys or get somebody like the Liberty Council or whoever to defend them just for exercising constitutionally guaranteed rights. It's crazy.
It's crazy. It's chilling. And again, bringing it back to some of these sort of sexual harassment charges, sexual assault, you know, two chilling, right, cases, right, that are very much in my mind, because I knew some of the folks involved. But the Duke lacrosse case.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Right. Everyone says, but remember how the media reacted when it first happened, right? Talk about trying to prove a negative. Talk about being accused of this stuff. Talk about using it as a weapon, and everyone believing, right, before those charges fell apart. But, you know, there was a great documentary that was on earlier this year that was just phenomenal. I think that walked you through how that unfolded. It was on ESPN. If you had a chance to see it. The other one, of course, I live in Northern Virginia, but the UVA Rolling Stone case, you know, absolutely stunning in terms of what could be done to pursue an agenda that says, you know, all these fraternities and are terrible, and here's this story that was absolutely crazy to begin with, but was believed. And I don't know if your listeners are following it, but that absolutely fell apart, and they're being sued, and it's going to trial right now. But two chilling examples of, as in my view, using these kind of sexual assault allegations as weapons.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm looking at your article here. Is this it, Roger Ailes, Bill Cosby, and the myth of the Anita Hill moment?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
Our listeners can find that at nationalreview.com. And Do you think at the end of the day that this is going to, well, you said it came out in April, nobody's watching it. So apparently Justice Thomas looks like he's probably going to come through this without a whole lot of people's eyebrows being raised. But
Well, I'll tell you, it's a shame. You know, it was nominated for two Emmys, of course, you know, politically. It didn't do very well, but Kerry Washington got a nomination. If you look on my confirmationbias.com site, Mark, I take you through minute by minute the movie. You can watch along and see my commentary so you could see where it's being sort of, you know, either factually wrong, a lie, you know, not leaving significant, you know, information out to sort of slant it. But if you want to talk about courage, you want to talk about, you know, a hero, that's Clarence Thomas, in my opinion. To come through that, to stand up to that, and, right, not to bend, right?
Yeah.
So many people, when they get attacked, they crumble and they go, to sort of, you know, to become more, you know, liberal or to sort of please their critics. But Thomas has been a rock, on the court, and with the passing of Justice Scalia, obviously, you know, he's even more the man on the Supreme Court.
Well, it certainly, talk about chilling, the notion of Hillary Clinton appointing justices to the Supreme Court is enough to keep you up at night.
And then some.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Mark Paoletti, you're a fabulous guest. We appreciate your time. And I will encourage our listeners to check out your article at National Review. And the other site was bias.com?
It's confirmationbias.com.
Confirmationbias.com.
Yeah, and that's a B-I-A-S-E-D at the end. Great site, has everything you ever need, including some documents that had never been released on the site that it shows why Anita Hill's story never added up.
All right. Well, you need to get active on Twitter here. I just followed you, and you need to get some more stuff out there because you have really good content, and love to talk to you again in the future. Thanks for being our guest here on What Matters in North Carolina.
Mark, thanks very much. Have a good day.
You too. Yeah. Needs to get some followers here. This guy's got good stuff, and I guess he's not tweeting enough. But anyway, maybe we can help him out with that. Mark Paoletti, great guest. I love guys that are able to talk and follow me around when I get off course and bring it back to stay on topic. If you're listening live and you want to call us at 919-747-9421, I'd really love an explanation. And I guess Mark Paoletti, our guest here, just gave one explanation, but I just don't get the media. Oh, we're going to be as liberal as we can because we love liberalism. We love liberalism. Well, let's see. Let's carry that all the way out to its ultimate end. That's communism, where the state controls everything. And suddenly your dear freedom of the press, which you love to abuse with your bias and your lack of journalistic integrity, is suddenly going to be gone. So why in the world would you embrace something like that? I guess his answer was, well, there are a bunch of people who think they're better than everybody else. They're people who are elitist in their thought and in their worldview. And that's sort of true. A lot of the mainstream media is like that. They'll walk by and they won't say hello, and they've got their nose up in the air, and they think they're better than everybody. And I guess I'm part of the media, but I'm certainly not mainstream, and I will certainly say hello if we pass on the street and I know who you are. It's just a whole different mentality and mindset. And I think it's sad because there used to be real journalists, real integrity, people who would come out with a story and just give you the facts no matter where they fell. But now, I mean, look, almost daily, I get tons and tons of stuff in my email because have to with this show. I have to know what's going on. And so many now, not under editorial or opinion, but so many things from the Charlotte Observer and the News and Observer that are couched as stories that are just blatant falsehoods and inaccuracies. And, you know, the headlines are designed in such a way to be just grossly biased. And I don't know what these people... I don't know. Maybe they just don't like a world where there's less government and where you get to keep more of your take-home pay. Maybe they don't like a world that has values and mores and freedom to worship. I don't know what motivates these folks. And I know a lot of them. Used to hang out with them at the General Assembly, and some of them were nice. Again, some of them were, you know, real uppity. But they just, on the surface, seem like regular folks. But I don't know where they get this drive to paint things in such a horrific, blatant, biased manner when it comes to anything that has to do with conservatism or the Republican Party. It just really is something that bewilders me. But go to nationalreview.com. Again, Mark Paoletto has written this piece there about the dredging up of the Anita Hill story, her sexual harassment charges that were discredited that she made against now Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. And really good article here, so I would encourage you to read that. And then, Matt, what was it? Biased content? I forget.
I'll track that one down.
Okay, yeah, his other website. Wow, I am old. What has that been, 3 minutes and I've forgotten already? Anyway. Well, we have a lot going on here at What Matters in North Carolina. We are trying to build a program that is growing. And
that would be confirmationbiased.com.
Okay, confirmationbiased.com. Check that out, where he talks about the confirmation hearings of Justice Thomas and how biased that was. And the point of all of this, getting back to this just a minute, is, you know, and maybe people just don't care. I don't know. Maybe it's okay that Bill Clinton has allegedly had dozens of affairs, and that his lack of faithfulness to his wife is just renowned, and that their marriage is really just a show. And maybe, you know, the fact that she has disparaged women who are victims by saying they need to quit whining. Maybe that's, you know, people just don't care. Maybe that is the answer for everything. Because there are people who are going to go into a voting booth and vote for her. By golly, I want Hillary Clinton to be my president. Yes, sirree. Why? I mean, Donald Trump was certainly not a saint. But with all that we know about the Clintons, how could you? Why would you? I don't understand. Tweet at me and tell me if you're going to vote for Hillary Clinton. Tell me why, at Mark Shiver. And maybe I can understand. Maybe you'll show me the light. Oh, even I think that's funny. All right, coming up, we're going to talk with Donald Bryson. He is the president of the North Carolina chapter of Americans for Prosperity. And they've got some cool stuff going on. We always look forward to talking to those folks every Tuesday at 4:05. And then a big segment at 4:35 on Obamacare. Remember that? A lot of people predicting a major meltdown is on the way when it comes to Obamacare. But speaking of Obamacare, folks, what is it? What will it take for people in America to finally stand up and say, I've had enough. I'm just not going to put up with this anymore. You know, we rolled over and allowed Obamacare to get in place. We're rolling over as the Second Amendment rights are being threatened every day. We're rolling over as First Amendment rights are not only being threatened every day, but are being trampled on and trashed and shredded and ripped out of the Constitution every single day all across this country. We're rolling over while some courts in this country are allowing Sharia law in a nation that is to be governed by the Constitution. What are we doing? What will it take before Americans say, I have had enough? Do you have any idea? Please tell me. You're on the Freedom Action Network. You're listening to What Matters in North Carolina. My name is Mark Shiver, and we're going to take a quick break, get you caught up with your Fox News, and we will be right back.
I'm Pam Husso. Donald Trump is about to become privy to classified information. Fox's Jared Halpern explains live from Washington.
Donald Trump will get his first classified intelligence briefing tomorrow, expected at a secure location at the FBI's New York field office. Sources tell Fox News the first presidential candidate briefing can run an hour or longer. It's led by the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. The campaign will work with that office on coordinating additional sessions and work on topics of interest to the candidate in areas of importance to the intelligence community. Security clearances not required. Candidates qualify because they have secured the nomination of a major party. Pam.
Thanks, Jared. Trump is in Milwaukee, where he plans to hold a roundtable with law enforcement.
This event was planned before all of the disturbances happened surrounding that police-involved shooting in Milwaukee. So Donald Trump tonight is going to shift gears a little bit. He's going to focus very much on law and order in this speech.
Fox's John Roberts. Despite topping polls in several battleground states, Hillary Clinton says she's not taking anybody anywhere for granted.
Hillary Clinton's campaign reminded people today that they want to register 3 million voters across the country, including African Americans, Latinos, and millennials. They also said that in Pennsylvania, the registration date deadline is October 11th.
Fox's Jennifer Griffin in Philadelphia. The State Department says it's unfortunate but not surprising that Russia is using an airbase in Iran to launch airstrikes in Syria. As the extent of the cooperation is assessed, the department says a deal between the U.S. and Moscow is a work in progress.
We're continuing to have those conversations. We continue to pursue that goal.
Spokesman Mark Toner. Another gold medal for American gymnast Simone Biles. She captured the floor exercise title in Rio. Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
Real experience, real insight.
We're following this explosive story.
Nothing gets by Greta. Then.
This is all BS. What was that all about?
There's no spin and no question. O'Reilly dominates. Plus, smart, sharp, and cutting edge.
It's the news of the day, but with a little heat.
Megan delivers. And Sean seals the deal with fearless talk.
What part of that are you understanding?
Most watched, most trusted, Fox News Channel. There's more to Fox News Radio than meets the ear. Go behind the headlines and join the conversation on the hottest stories of the day on the Fox News Radio Facebook page. Be a part of the Fox News Radio Facebook fan community. Post comments and tell us your opinions. See behind-the-scenes photos and videos and post your reactions to the stories that matter to you. Click the like button on Facebook and connect with breaking news and features like Fox in the Fast Lane, House Call for Help, and more. Go to Facebook.com/Fox News Radio.
The number of dead in Louisiana climbing to at least 10 as high water rescue efforts continue.
You not only have a lot of local first responders, of course, on the ground working round the clock here, but also the National Guard has been deployed. We've seen them, in addition to the U.S. Coast Guard, using air assets to pluck people from their homes surrounded by fast rising floodwaters. In fact, some 30,000 people have been rescued here since Friday.
Fox says Casey Stiegel in Baton Rouge, some 40,000 homes have been inundated with floodwaters. Moisture is desperately needed in Northern California, where crews are making progress against a wildfire. Containment at 20%. This comes as authorities make an arrest.
Damon Pelchick is in jail facing 17 counts of arson, which many locals say could help explain why this area has seen so many major wildfires over the past couple of years.
Fox's Claudia Cowan in Lower Lake. Reaction from Donald Trump to the release of more than a dozen detainees from the Guantanamo Bay prison. In a press release, Trump says the Clinton-Obama plan to close the facility will harm America's national security.
The Pentagon says 15 prisoners were sent to the United Arab Emirates in the biggest release from the Guantanamo Bay detention center in Cuba under President Obama's watch. Only 61 detainees now remain at Gitmo, down from nearly 800 during the post-9/11 years. The latest batch of released prisoners had mostly been held without charge for some 14 years. Closing the prison at Guantanamo Bay was one of President Obama's campaign promises in 2008. In Washington, Rachel Sutherland, Fox News.
Late word that the FBI has provided a House committee with documents related to its probe of Hillary Clinton's emails. Fox News confirming the materials do contain classified material. On Wall Street, the Dow down 53. Campuso, Fox News Radio.
Welcome back to What Matters in North Carolina. Hi there, my name is Mark Shiver. So glad that you are listening to the program here today on a Tuesday. I always want to say Wednesday when it's Tuesday. I don't know why, but anyway, it's Tuesday. It's hot. It's August. It's North Carolina. It's humid, and all of the above. The weather forecast does not change from about mid-June to about mid-September. But hey, it's only about a month away, and things will get a little bit cooler, we are hoping. By the way, before we get to Donald Bryson of Americans for Prosperity, I wanted to remind you once again that you can go to the Civitas webpage and sign up for our poll launch, which is actually 2 days away, nccivitas.org, and go there, and there's a little tab at the top that says calendar. So you stick your cursor there and slide down to Civitas Events. And it'll give you all the information you need coming up on the 18th. It is the August poll lunch. You are invited to attend. Tickets are only $15. But if you use the radio promo code or the code promo code radio, then you'll get a $5 discount. And this is at the DoubleTree Hotel in Hillsboro. You might more familiarly remember that as the Brownstone. John Davis will be there along with Francis DeLuca, president of the Civitas Institute, to talk about the poll. And the reason this one is so important and why you might want to go is because it is their, that is the Civitas Institute's unaffiliated poll. It is the poll of unaffiliated voters in North Carolina. And so this is kind of pretty big doings. And John Davis has been around for 40 years and just a great great person to listen to his insight on politics and things that have changed and things that have stayed the same and where North Carolina is going. So avail yourself of a nice lunch at the DoubleTree on Hillsboro. It's go to nccivitas.org, calendar, events, and sign up for the poll lunch. Remember to use the promo code radio to get yourself a $5 discount. Well, every Tuesday at 4:05, it is our pleasure to welcome to the program Donald Bryson. He is the president of the North Carolina chapter of Americans for Prosperity. Donald, welcome to What Matters in North Carolina.
I'm always happy to be on. I'm calling in from Tossil Island down here on the coast, meeting with some activists doing some good AFP work down here.
Well, yeah, I believe that. I think AFP work probably means sitting on the beach. just giving you a hard time, buddy. I tell you, I love Tossil. My father-in-law has a place down there at Surf City, and there's nothing like those North Carolina beaches.
No, there's really not. You know, we've got a beautiful state. I was just up in the mountains a couple of weeks ago up around Asheville, and then had to go up to Boone to do some work. And you know, people talk about from the mountains to the coast, and it's a really just a beautiful state.
Well, it really is. And we just had Representative Mike Hager on the telephone. Sounds like you're being bombed there, Donald. Are you okay?
It does.
we just had Representative Mike Hager on the telephone. As you know, his resignation from the North Carolina House of Representatives goes into effect at midnight tonight. And I know that you feel a lot like I do, that Representative Hager has been a strong voice for conservative principles here in the state. What are your thoughts about Representative Mike Hager and his resignation from the House?
I'm really saddened by that. You know, Representative Hager has been a fantastic majority leader. Helped pass some of the best budgets North Carolina has ever seen, and really pushed for good conservative reform on the, you know, tax and spending side, but also on the energy reform side. He's absolutely been a leader, and, you know, I consider him a great legislator, but also a good friend, and I'm just really saddened to lose him, here, you know, from the Raleigh area and from what the impact he's going to have on state government.
Well, he definitely has been a member of the North Carolina House who has stood up for conservative principles. And I asked him, and I wanted to get your take on this. What do you think, you know, Representative Rick Catlin or Caitlin, I'm not sure how you say it, but he resigned down in New Hanover on Monday. There's going to be a lot of new faces, Donald, in the North Carolina House and Senate. As far as being able to continue to advance conservative principles, do you think that's going to be a challenging now with all of these new new faces coming in?
I think it's just going to be different, not harder necessarily. I think that, you know, what you've seen since 2010 in North Carolina has really been a cultural shift in how people think about state government. And I don't think that that was just, you know, only the people that got elected to go to Raleigh. I think that the people who elected them and in those communities changed and thought about tax reform and how we need to control government spending and get Raleigh out of the lives of people in Boone and, you know, Topsail Island for that matter. And you know, just let the economy go. So I think it's just new faces, but I think that we can continue to reform North Carolina and make this an even larger economic effect.
Well, our guest, Donald Bryson, president of the North Carolina Chapter of Americans for Prosperity, here on What Matters in North Carolina. Donald, the as you mentioned, he's been a strong conservative, and one of the things that he has stood up face-to-face with has been the whole notion of using taxpayer dollars to fund renewable energy tax credits, renewable energy portfolio standard. I think that is going to be a voice that is most definitely going to be missed. Who do you think will pick up the mantle to carry on that particular part of the conservative fight?
He's definitely going to be missed on that front. You know, Representative Hager, the former engineer with Duke Energy, he retired from that life and became kind of a land developer down in Rutherford County. But, you know, when an engineer who actually ran power plants gets up and talks about energy policy, you know, people listen.
Exactly.
I think that the, you know, the person that people are going to look to on the energy reform front is probably Representative Chris Millis, who I'm actually standing in his district right now. He's from Pender County. It represents parts of Pender and Onslow County. And, you know, it's kind of funny. He goes from one engineer to another. But if you look at in the state house in particular, if you look at all the engineers and even Representative Marilyn Avila, who is a chemist by trade, you know, all those people with all the hard sciences as their profession, they're all against all this renewable energy mandates and tax credits and things like that because they see that the math on it just simply doesn't work. And I think there's something to be said about that.
Well, you know, Donald, I don't think I had a chance to talk to you about this. I know Joseph Kaiser, your very fine communications director, with us last week, but I'm sure you saw the news that Nevada has moved forward in the last couple of weeks with actually doing away some of its state support, in fact, a large amount of its state support of the solar industry in there, and they are saying exactly what, you know, we've been saying here in North Carolina for some time. If you're such a great, viable industry, isn't it time you stood on your own? And folks out in Nevada that, you know, are really in favor of tax-supported renewable energy, they're just going nuts. But Nevada has said, okay, it's time to put up or shut up. If you're such a great business, you can do it without being funded by the government.
That's absolutely right. You know, I don't have anything against renewable energy in particular. I just have a problem with industries that come begging for taxpayer money or, you know, requiring, you know, asking the government to require that their products be bought.
Right.
But that being said, in Nevada, it looks a lot like rats leaving the ship. Because what they have out there is a policy, and a lot of states have, called net metering.
Yes.
And it's the idea that, you know, if you have a renewable energy facility that has a surplus in power and it sells that power back to the grid, the problem is that, you know, Mark, a lot of people run businesses, and they know that when they sell goods, they buy them at a wholesale rate, and they sell them at a retail rate. And in a lot of states, in Nevada in particular, you know, they were requiring those utilities to reimburse those renewable energy facilities, those solar facilities in particular, back at the retail rate. So basically, they had to buy the power at the retail rate and then resell it at the retail rate, usually at a loss. And they were ending that policy in Nevada, and you can just see all the solar folks are leaving that state now.
Well, imagine that. And, you know, I'm with you. I think that certainly wind, solar, any of that stuff, if it's viable, then, you know, more power to them. Little pun there, Donald. Power. Get it. Never mind. Anyway.
Yes, sir. Well done. Well done.
But if it means that they're going to have to be propped up by millions and millions of taxpayer dollars, then, you know, I don't think that that's a road that our state or even our nation, frankly, should be going down. I really don't.
That's not, and there's a lot of argument to be said that they don't have to be propped up by taxpayer dollars. You know, a lot of the renewable energy debate we had in 2015, we had a big one with a lot of different policies in North Carolina at the General Assembly, and they kept coming up with all these studies saying, look, we're economically viable. You know, right now it actually costs less to produce, you know, a kilowatt hour of solar energy than it does from coal. And I'm like, fantastic. And that means that you don't need any more subsidies. Yay, because people will just buy your product. And they're like, oh, well, that's not exactly what we meant. I'm like, well, no, wait. Now you're either on your feet or you're not.
Yeah, exactly. Our guest is Donald Bryson, does a great job as president of the North Carolina chapter of Americans for Prosperity. Now, I noticed that, and this may not be in your wheelhouse, so it's not, we'll move on, but I noticed that Americans for Prosperity has come out with some comments last week or so about the reality of socialism as it has failed so miserably in Venezuela. And at the same time, the Cato Institute today released, or yesterday, whenever it was, they released freedom rankings that they put together in all 50 states. And then on top of that, PolitiFact, North Carolina has had the country's fastest growing economy in 2013. So my point, Donald, I think you would agree, is that, you know, we have a glaring example of failure in Venezuela with big government and government control. And we have a state like North Carolina that has been, you know, allowed to have less government regulation and lower taxes. And lo and behold, it's doing quite well. Thank you very much.
That's absolutely right. You know, that Cato ranking that you're talking about, their Freedom in the States Index, North Carolina moved up from 23rd to 19th, moving up four spots isn't a bad thing. Obviously, we'd like to be higher than 19th, but moving up to 19th and being in the top half of the country isn't a bad thing, and we're really, really proud of that. but, yeah, I mean, Venezuela, I think, is an excellent example. You know, one of the saddest things I've seen, and I'm not exactly an animal rights activist, but, you know, seeing that, you know, there are animals literally starving to death in the Caracas Zoo because they don't have the money to fund the zoo and fund the workers to go to the zoo and things like that. Like, that's what happens when you have the tragedy of the commons and the government's just going to take care of everything. And, you know, as Margaret Thatcher said, eventually you're just going to run out of other people's money, which appears to is what happened down in Venezuela.
Well, they're having a horrible time down there. They can't find any food. They're really, really struggling, and we feel bad for the people. It's always the people, Donald, who are the victims of these ill-conceived notions by those who would try to assimilate power unto themselves. And that's really what socialism and communism and all the other isms are all about, is concentrating power in the hands of the elite. But we see that, strikingly, Venezuela has just a gazillion barrels of oil, and yet because of the horrendous mismanagement on the part of the government, the people are starving.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. And because they haven't, you know, perpetuated property rights and things like that, and, you know, freeing up that economy even more for the people of Venezuela, they haven't been able to provide for themselves, and now the government's not able to provide for them, which is what, you know, everybody's been anticipating for several years now.
Well, Donald, before we let you get back to enjoying the beach, I mean, working hard at the beach, before we let you go, let me ask you this question. If anybody travels the state and you're on the ground meeting people every single day, give us a pulse, give us a temperature reading. What's the mood like across the state of North Carolina with the, you know, the everyday folks that you come in contact with every day?
Well, you know, it's sort of odd in North Carolina. And if you talk to people in North Carolina right now about the North Carolina economy, it's like if you told your local public school, I'm doing fine, but everybody else is doing terrible. Huh. Which is sort of interesting. You know, North Carolina, to your point, has had the fastest growing GDP since 2013. We're a state that's just absolutely booming. Since we passed our tax reform, we created more than 300,000 jobs, which is far more than any of our surrounding states. The unemployment rate is below 5%. But people get a sense that they're probably better off, but they don't think that necessarily their neighbors are. I think that's due in large part to the fact that the Governor Cory and the General Assembly, who passed all these great reforms, just haven't told anybody about them.
Well, I guess that's something maybe. I saw the nice door hangers you guys have. Joseph brought one last week, and maybe you can get the word out about all of the great accomplishments that have been made in our state over the past few years.
We're working on it. We're working on it real hard, knocking on thousands of doors and making hundreds of thousands of phone calls every week.
Well, I'll let you get back at it. Drink plenty of water. It's hot out there, and we'll look forward to talking with you again next week. Donald Bryson, president of the North Carolina Chapter of Americans for Prosperity, thank you, as always, for being our guest on What Matters in North Carolina.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for having me on. Best audience in radio.
There you go. Thank you very much. All right. That's Donald Bryson, and sounded like maybe a sand dune nearby with some wind. But I'm sure he's working hard. I'll tell you what, folks, the people in politics who are really to be admired is groups like Americans for Prosperity, because they are doing the grassroots. Well, Bart, what does that mean? Well, it means they're calling people. They're knocking on doors. They're handing out information. It's hot. And yet they are so committed to getting the message of less government regulation, lower taxes, financial prudence on the part of those who are spending your and my tax money. They're so committed to getting that message out that they are willing to get out into this hot weather. And, you know, when it's cold, get out in the cold weather. When it's raining, they're out in the rain. They're committed to meeting people and spreading the news. And there is not another grassroots organization that I'm aware of, there may be, but that does what they do with more effectiveness than Americans for Prosperity. Going to jump out real quick and get you a little break, and we'll come right back and talk about some very interesting things that I bet you didn't know. You're listening to What Matters in North Carolina. This is the Freedom Action Network. We'll be right back.
I'm Mikhail, a student at Hillsdale College. Here is Hillsdale President Larry Arnn on the threat of bureaucratic despotism.
One of the chief sponsors of the Dodd-Frank finance reform bill called that legislation, quote, about as important as it gets, because it deals with every single aspect of our lives, end quote. And how does this legislation deal with every aspect of our lives? In the most unconstitutional way. It sets up a board called the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which has the power to regulate our economic transactions independently of both the President and Congress. In other words, permanent government employees are placed in charge of us beyond the control of those we elect, the control of we the people. This is a violation of the representative form of government without which there can be no constitutional government.
This Constitution Minute was brought to you by Hillsdale College. To join the national conversation on the Constitution, go to ConstitutionMinute.com.
What time is it? Well, it's either time for a beer or time to turn on the Free to Brew podcast. Just like your color TV and the internet, craft beer is not going away anytime soon. Tune in to the show for a free market perspective on the latest in beer news, regulations, and why the brewing industry has more to do with North Carolina politics than you realize. We tackle the distribution cap, taxes, food trucks, labeling, packaging, and anything I can possibly get away with. Try out the latest podcast on your drive home today. That's the Free to Brew Show with me, your host, Greg Polsher. At the end of the day, you can't have beer without liberty, and you can't have liberty without beer.
Welcome back to What Matters in North Carolina. My name is Mark Shiver. Glad to have you listening to the program today. Want to encourage you to let your friends and your family know about what matters in North Carolina. We are fast becoming a destination radio program for those who are interested in finding out what is going on in not only North Carolina, but across the country, and get all the information that you can to make the best decisions that you can when it comes to government and policy and things that are going on all around us, quite frankly, that in some cases are a little chilling. You know, we talked earlier about men being accused of some type of sexual harassment or impropriety. And it really is a reality that if you are accused, well, you're just toast. You know, and if you did it, well, then obviously, you know, there should be consequences. But a guy can be accused, and even if he did nothing, the onus is on him entirely to prove that he did not. And even then, it's very difficult for a guy to somehow salvage their reputation if they have had that kind of accusation. And so here's Anita Hill saying that Clarence Thomas had behaved inappropriately with her, and, you know, he had to listen to a lot of, you know, bad stuff that she accused him of. And the allegations were subsequently discredited. And yet the media, or the left, or I guess HBO, I don't know if they're the media or just entertainment, but they have decided, well, let's dredge this up again. And so now we have a movie which our guest, Mark Paoletta, told us that the movie didn't do very well in the theaters. But, you know, what's the point? Why, you know, drag Justice Thomas through the mud again? Well, because they can, and because they don't like conservatives. They don't like conservative African Americans who have been successful. And certainly you could argue that he is at the zenith of success at in some levels. Lifetime position on the highest court in the United States. And so he's just not liked. And unfortunately, he's having to go through this, you know, this whole thing again. Let's just dredge this stuff up and see if we can, you know, smear his name again. Well, anyway, the funny thing, well, it's not funny, it's sad about all of this, is that Hillary Clinton, you know, saying that women, victims of sexual improprieties, at one point said, well, they should just quit whining. And that kind of stuff, man, people are going to vote for her. And it's just aggravating. That's what it's just aggravating to think about. But did you know, and I did not know this, and this is pretty pretty interesting stuff, that when President Obama leaves office, whether it is Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump, they're immediately going to be faced with an enormous, enormous challenge from day one, not even day one, hour one, in the Middle East. And if you haven't been keeping up, you will know that in Afghanistan, the President Obama has slowed down the pace of withdrawing troops, but we have the torrent of violence going on in Syria with ISIS. We have Iran over there with you know, this nuclear deal and ransom money, apparently, that he paid them to release some hostages, special forces on the ground in four civil wars. Now, if you count Afghanistan, it would be five. And there's just no end to what is going on over there in the Middle East for the United States. Russia is trying to, well, it's not trying, it's building up along the border with the Ukraine. China in the South China Sea. I saw this morning, was at the gym. They've got ships over there trying to nosing around and making people nervous. And so it is very important that whoever we vote for is someone who will be up to the task and who will surround themselves with, you know, expert military advisors, because this is a big mess from day one that our next president will have to face. And by the way, we want a president that's not sharing emails of classified information with everybody and their brother. You're listening to the Freedom Action Network. This is What Matters in North Carolina. Coming up, we'll be talking about Obamacare, but first we'll get you caught up with your Fox News.
Ready to go? I'm Pam Husso. As another body is discovered in the floodwaters of Louisiana, nearly half of the state's parishes are declared federal disaster zones. Fox's Evan Brown live in Livingston.
Pam, we're southeast of Baton Rouge. The rain had been coming down in sheets, but the problems really are the rivers. They're all overflowing due to all the water flowing out of Baton Rouge. And now here in Livingston Parish, nearly three-quarters of the homes are likely destroyed, if not severely damaged, by the flooding. The rivers here are now slowly receding, but again, that flood water is still moving down the rivers and will be striking more communities. Here in this parish, the sheriff's office says more than 40% of his deputies have lost their homes, yet are still on the job in the midst of the crisis, Pam.
Thanks, Evan. Turned over to the House Oversight Committee by the FBI, more documents related to Hillary Clinton's email scandal, Fox News confirming some of the material is classified.
We are still trying to come up with a decision on how we'll, or whether we'll release them publicly, as we did with the 55,000.
State Department spokesman Mark Toner, reaction in a letter by the ranking Democrat on the House Oversight Committee. Elijah Cummings accuses Republicans of trying to resuscitate the issue to distract from Donald Trump's sagging poll numbers. Trump is about to be introduced to some classified information. He'll receive his first intelligence briefing tomorrow. Tonight, he speaks in Wisconsin, just days after a suspect was shot and killed by police.
He's awaiting the release of the body cam video from the officer that was involved in the shooting of Slyvell Smith, but he is inclined, at least initially, to give the officer the benefit of the doubt.
Fox says John Roberts, the shooting led to violent protests over the weekend. Last night, the streets were calmer in Milwaukee. Wall Street didn't break any records. The Dow down 83 points. Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
In the small town of Elmira, New York, a boy was born into an all-American family. The odds of him opening his own clothing store at the age of 18? 1 in 138,000. Excited to be a part of pop culture, he packed for the big city. The odds of finding someone to invest in his vision? 1 in 4.5 million. The odds of him achieving his dream in the fashion industry? 1 in 23 million. The odds of having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 68. I am Tommy Hilfiger, and my family is affected by autism. I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Police in Northern Virginia are investigating the deadly shooting of a suspect who they say threatened a sheriff's deputy with a weapon.
This weapon was later determined to be a metal signpost that has a spade on the bottom, which is sharp, to push into the ground to hold the sign in.
Fairfax County Police Chief Edwin Rossler, the officer, was responding to a call about a suspicious man at a bus stop. As the suspect appeared in court for the first time, relatives of a mosque leader and an assistant who were shot and killed in New York were asking why. Many in the community believe a hate crime was committed. Police haven't determined a motive. Oscar Morell is charged with first-degree murder.
Surveillance video taken from a house across the street shows a man walk up and shoot Queens Imam Maulana Akanji and his friend Tara Uden Saturday afternoon, which was a critical piece of evidence in the hunt to find the alleged killer. When police searched Morell's home, they found a revolver and clothes matching what the shooter was wearing in the video.
Fox's Laura Engel in New York. It's 20%. 100% contained, but a wildfire in Northern California is still dangerous.
There's still a lot of risk, not only to Lower Lake, but parts of Clear Lake as well. And that's why those evacuations still remain in effect.
Daniel Berland with CAL FIRE. As crews gain ground, authorities make an arrest.
Brian Martin is the sheriff of Lake County.
We all that call Lake County home know that the fire activity that we've been experiencing over the last couple of years is definitely not normal. Fires don't just simply start.
He announced the arrest of Damon Paschalk, who's apparently been under investigation for the better part of a year. He's been charged with 17 counts of arson in connection with several fires, including the Clayton fire.
Fox's Jessica Rosenthal. In Southern California, a new fire is burning about 60 miles east of Los Angeles. Authorities say the blaze exploded to 1,000 acres in about 90 minutes. Pam Puso, Fox News Radio.
Welcome back to What Matters in North Carolina. The show really seems to have flown by today. If you missed any of our previous guests, we've just had a really nice group today. Representative Mike Hager talking about his exit from the North Carolina General Assembly as he is retiring. We had a nice chat with him. Also, Mark Pauletta, former White House counsel and congressional investigator on the resurgence, the drudging up, as it were, of the Anita Hill controversy, still discredited, even though HBO is trying to make a big deal about that. We also talked with Americans for Prosperity, North Carolina chapter president Donald Bryson. And one thing that sort of gets lost in the pale, I think, of the goings-on in the current presidential campaign, you know what I mean. Every morning it's, another scandal with Hillary Clinton. Another email this, another Clinton Foundation that, or, you wake up wondering, what did the Donald say today? And unfortunately, some of the real issues, like we were just talking before the break about the conflict in the Middle East and what a mess that is. Well, there's another mess right here at home, and it's called the Affordable Care Act, or more lovingly known, and I say that with great facetiousness, as Obamacare. And it may be about to melt down, and we're going to find out what's up with that. Our guest is Ed Heismeyer. Ed, tell me again. My producer told me, and I'm just butchering your name.
That's okay. Heiselmeyer.
Heiselmeyer. Thank you very much. He is a senior research fellow with the Heritage Foundation, all things involving health policy studies. Ed, welcome to What Matters in North Carolina.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I personally don't like the Affordable Care Act. Tell you a quick anecdote. My daughter was not living at home last year, spent 6 months in another country, Thailand and Cambodia, as a missionary. She came back and was living in our house and did so for more than 4 months, which according to IRS rules, or no, more than 6 months, which according to IRS rules, we had to claim her as a dependent. And she had gotten insurance through the Affordable Care Act when she was single and living by herself. But because she was living with us, we had to pay the difference in the subsidies that they gave her. And it was more than $1,000, more than $2,000. And I wasn't a very happy camper, Ed. And I don't think a lot of people are happy with the Affordable Care Act. Would you agree?
Yeah, no, there's a lot of discontent out there. I mean, the thing to keep in mind is the majority of Americans haven't really been affected by it, but the ones that have been pretty badly affected and are overwhelmingly, I think, the negative experience side is outweighing the positive experience side.
Well, and you are talking about the next president could be dealing with an insurer meltdown. In fact, today I'm looking at two separate articles talking about Aetna vastly reducing right. its presence on the individual exchanges. Another website says Aetna pulling back big time. What is this going to do to the Affordable Care Act and its ability to, just offer coverage?
Well, this is where you have to sort of break the thing into the pieces to understand what's going on. So Aetna is a good example because they're pulling out of North Carolina. They're also pulling out of South Carolina, which based on where we stand right now, that would leave South Carolina with only one carrier offering exchange coverage next year, and almost the same situation in North Carolina, because in both those states, the Blue Cross plan is still offering, but the others are gone. Though in North Carolina, Cigna has said they will come in and offer, but only in the Raleigh-Durham area. So effectively, you're looking at about one carrier. What does that translate into? Well, let's break out some numbers here. Before the ACA, before Obamacare, there were roughly, and it fluctuated a little bit from year to year, but there were roughly 12 million people in the individual insurance market. These are mainly people who are self-employed, people like your daughter who are, you know, off doing something on their own. They're, you know, between the place where most people get it, which is employment insurance.
Right.
So they're about 12 million. We're now up at about 17.5 million as of the end of the last year. And of those, about 7.5 million are getting subsidized exchange coverage from Obamacare. The other 10 million are either not buying on the exchange, there are a few of them buying on the exchange, but none of them are getting subsidies. So the problem is that because the ACA says you have to include all those people as an insurer in your risk pool, as one pool, if you're offering on the exchange, these premium increases are hitting people who aren't getting any offsetting subsidies. So you see, the administration will come out and say, oh, well, don't worry about the premium increases because most of the people will be getting subsidies. Well, no, the 7 million will, but the 10 million are getting all pain and no gain. There are no offsetting subsidies. So when Aetna pulls out, what they're doing is they're saying, well, we're just not going to offer to that group that's being subsidized on the exchange, but we'll keep offering on the outside to, in most places, to people who buy their own insurance directly through a broker, through e-health insurance, you know, call up Aetna, whatever.
Right.
Now, that will help them keep the premiums down a bit for their customers. What it means is if you're one of those low-income sick people who is counting on heavily subsidized exchange coverage, you're going to come down to having maybe no choice of insurer.
Wow.
So what that means is the ACA on the exchanges becomes something like what it was before with those people, which is a government-subsidized high-risk pool.
Well, we certainly...
you know, with no choice.
We certainly don't want that.
Well, I mean, it's better than nothing if you're poor and sick.
Yeah.
And see, the problem with this law is because it was so badly designed. I mean, I looked at this when it was passed and I said, you know, okay, there's going to be a lot of disruption, but where does it settle down? What's the, as physicists would say, the equilibrium state, you know?
Right. Yeah.
You know, what's the level that the water's at after it stops sloshing around, you know? And what it's going to look like is a market of about where it is today, about 8 million people, plus or minus a bit. They're going to be disproportionately low income because you have to be really low income to get, I mean, if you're really low income, it's a great deal. Virtually everything gets paid for. But if you're even a little bit above that, if you're, you know, for somebody who's single, I mean, look, if you're earning the minimum wage, it's a great deal. If you're earning, you know, $10 an hour, not so good. By the time you hit $12 or $13 an hour, you're not getting any subsidy.
Well, Ed, really, the bottom line is, I think we could all agree that the Affordable Care Act really hasn't solved anything.
No.
In terms of health care.
No, it's moved some stuff around. I mean, one of the interesting things about this is that the reason the losses are so big and the reason that you have this sort of high-risk pool is they didn't think it through, and they wound up creating a magnet for low-income sick people.
Yeah.
So you know, the folks who are defending this say, oh, we had no idea there was so much unmet need, pent-up demand among the uninsured. That's not the case. A lot of these people already had insurance, but they moved to where they paid less for the same or better. So think about it. If somebody has an employer, say you're working for a large employer and you lose your job, layoff or whatnot, you can get COBRA continuation coverage, right?
Yeah.
But you have to pay the premium.
Yeah.
And you don't get any tax break for doing that, right?
And so their premiums are normally very, very expensive.
Right. So if you're healthy, are you going to do that? No. Especially if you're young and healthy and don't have a family. But if you have a medical condition, you'll do that, which is what keeps the premium. Now along comes the ACA, and instead of doing that, you can go to the exchange and get it heavily paid for by somebody else, the taxpayer, because you can say, well, I have low income. I just got laid off.
Yeah.
So it's not like these people didn't have insurance.
Well,
they did.
Yeah, yeah, and see.
But now we've just concentrated them in one place, and we're only spreading the costs among a very small slice of people.
Well, let me ask you this. The next president is going to be faced with what to do. And you mentioned in some of the stuff that we were reading prior to this that the open enrollment starts right before election day and it ends right before inauguration.
Yes.
So
yeah, that's very convenient, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. But I think you've made the point that we've got this big pool of basically unhealthy people. So most Americans, as you said, still have not been really slapped in the face by this, and they may not really care.
Well, but the ones who have been slapped care a lot. And that's the people in the individual and small employer market who have seen a lot of the premium increases and loss of coverage. And those are the people who've been driving. And that's why it's so interesting, the consistent opposition to this. I actually think, and I've done a number of interviews on this today, I actually think that the president matters less than Congress, because I think here's how it's going to work. It's pressure from these constituents on their congressmen, congressmen, congresswomen, whatever.
Well, according to the
Congress critters.
gender unicorn there, Ed, I don't know.
The gender unicorn, yeah. You know, the Congress critters, as some people call them. But anyhow, it's going to be the pressure on them. And what I'm looking for is the point at which Democrat members of Congress start to realize that this is not working out for them politically, and they need to reopen the bill and work with Republicans on fixing some of this stuff. And because so far they haven't, in spite of taking massive shellackings in the elections. And, you know, maybe this election will be different, but I don't see how it will be. Anyhow, I see that this will, you know, the other side, I mean, basically what people on our side are saying is you got to reopen the bill and start fixing some of these fundamental flaws and doing stuff differently than the way you did it in this bill. And the Obama administration has virulently resisted doing any of that. And the folks in Congress who supported the ACA have resisted doing any of that. The other side is now coming to the point where, as it all falls apart, their solutions would be to spend more taxpayer money to bail it out, and more regulations. Now, I don't see either of those passing a Republican House of Representatives. So you've got this standoff there, and I don't see the Republicans losing the House of Representatives. So you've got this standoff there. So something's got to give. Now, at the point at what something gives and they actually move something, then I think whoever's president will sign it.
Well,
just to get it off the table.
Yeah, and but see, you know, one of the things, Ed, and we're talking with our guest, Ed Halsmeyer. He is with the Heritage Foundation, obviously knows his stuff. He's their senior research fellow when it comes to health policy studies. Ed, one of the disappointing things about this Republican majority in the House and the Senate is that they have not done anything tangible. And everybody said, well, you know, President Obama's going to veto it anyway. But I think part of the allure of Donald Trump is the frustration that people were feeling because, by golly, these folks aren't doing anything. So how can anybody be assured that they're going to do anything if they continue to have a majority?
Well, let me make 2 points on there. One, yes, I share that frustration. I think they have missed a number of opportunities to do things. I absolutely agree with that. But in fairness, I have to point out that they did take some opportunities where they could, and they actually have made changes. Interestingly enough, through the budget and appropriations process, that's where the victories have come. And that's why I think we need to really focus on that next year. For example, they blocked the risk corridors from turning into an insurer bailout. That has helped hasten the situation we're in today, had they not done that a while back. They cut a lot of the money that was being used by the Obama administration to prop this thing up and to spread money around. They saved the taxpayers over half of the money that was originally appropriated for these co-ops, which have all failed, right? They were going to spend $6 billion. They were able to take away, after the administration had gotten the money out the door, once the Republicans came in, they were able to take it away. So at the end, the administration only wasted $3.2 billion. Now, you know, this isn't huge, but they have been able to make some progress. The administration, there was something in there called the Prevention Public Health Fund, which interestingly was sponsored by a liberal Democrat, Tom Harkin of Iowa. And the administration, the Obama administration, was raiding that as a piggy bank to pay for all this stuff in Obamacare. And even Harkin got upset and worked with the Republicans in one of those omnibus bills to nail down all the money so that Sebelius and then Burwell couldn't spend it. So I'm just, you know, there was a whole long-term care program that was completely unsustainable in this bill, the CLASS Act, that they were forced to repeal. So there have been some victories here. And I think it's fair to give credit for those victories. My criticism of the Republicans in the House is that they haven't learned from their victories how to repeat the process, how to rerun the play so you score again.
Yeah.
You know? It's not that they haven't done anything. It's like, you know, I mean, I'll give you remember the Keystone Pipeline?
Yeah.
Remember that? You know, that is my model, and this is where I fault the Republicans. They should rerun that playbook over and over and over again on health care and everything else. What did they do? They put a conservative version on the floor of the House. This was with Boehner, by the way, was still Speaker. They put a very conservative version in the House of their bill. They sent it to the Senate. Senator McConnell put it on the floor of the Senate and let both sides have at it. Open amendments, right? And the Democrats had global warming amendments and all sorts of things. But at the end of the day, what happened? It came out of the Senate as a bipartisan bill. And it had moderate Democrats on it, okay, including Mary Landrieu. And at that point, the Speaker can turn to the most conservative House members and say, see, this is as good as we're going to get out of the Senate. At that point, it's up to the President. You either veto it or you go along with it. Now, he vetoed that, but notice he suddenly got all quiet about it, and you never heard about it again.
Right.
Okay. And remember, the Keystone Pipeline was about some intangible jobs down the road in the future, not about something like my healthcare premium this month.
Yeah.
So you can do the same dynamic and put pressure on a president to go along with it.
Well,
that's my take on the politics of it. But I fault them for not repeating it. My point was, you succeeded. Do it again. Do it again.
Well, I agree with you completely, and I think, again, not to get bogged down on this point, but I think that some of the frustration that has led to, at least in the Republican primaries anyway, the mm-hmm. advent of Trump was the establishment not being able to get anything done.
Yeah, and I agree. It's very obvious, and that's very true. And I just and the establishment bears some blame, but my point is both the establishment and the sort of non-establishment need to realize that this is not this is a marathon, not a sprint. This is a series of incremental things. You're not going to ride in on and change everything in one fell swoop.
Right, I understand. So let me ask you this: And unfortunately, Ed, we're running out of time, so but I'm going to try and squeeze in two quick questions. Number one, you know, I would be happy if it were repealed. Unfortunately, like most things big government, once it's in place, it's hard to do that. So absent repealing the whole thing, can you give me in 60 seconds, if you were in charge of the play call for the next Congress, what's the next best thing for conservatives?
Well, you do repeal and replace, but you just do it in pieces and you do it in sequence, and you take and the sequence is, where do I have opportunities? If people are screaming about premiums, let's focus on this. If states are going broke on the Medicaid expansion, let's focus on that. I've got my list of stuff. You know, my colleague who's does similar work at the American Enterprise Institute likes to say repeal and replace. I prefer debone and fillet.
I love it.
That's Tom Miller.
Yeah,
and he's got a great wit. But that's what you got to do. You got to do this. This could be done, but you're going to have to do it in pieces. And by the way, that last reconciliation bill that they ran that President vetoed, that was a great dry run for when you have somebody who will sign the bill. They actually have 98%. If I was to write a reconciliation bill and repeal everything that I could in Obamacare and redo it, that bill is 95% of what I would write.
All right, last question, and we'll definitely look forward to having you on again, because we certainly are running out of time, and you're one of the most articulate people that we've had on about this issue. But here in North Carolina, the liberals are screaming daily almost about expand Medicaid and you can get 500,000 people insured, yeah, and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I still don't think that's a good idea.
Well, let's talk very quickly. Who today is below 138% of the poverty level? And remember, federal minimum wage gets you, if you work at full time, a full year, about 125% of poverty, okay?
Okay.
So that gives you, you know, $7.25 an hour. You do that 40 hours a week, 50 weeks a year, you're at 125% of poverty. So who is below 138% of poverty in the state of North Carolina that is not covered by Medicaid? Is it kids? No, kids are all covered. They've been covered for years. Is it disabled adults? No, disabled adults are covered. Is it elderly poor people? No, they've got Medicare, and the Medicaid covers to wrap around to pay their co-pays and the deductibles. Is it parents? Some of them might not be covered. I've forgotten where North Carolina sets the line for parents of poor kids on the program. But when you come down to it, nationally, and the figures state by state don't vary very much, 84% of the people who would gain coverage have no dependent children and are not disabled. None of them are disabled. They're all adults, and none of them are disabled, and they have no dependent children in 84% of the time. And 52% of the time, they're between 18 and 34.
Wow.
So you're putting able-bodied young adults, including graduate students, on the program, people like your daughter, okay? You're talking about your daughter. You know, if she goes to the exchange, they're going to look at her as based on her tax filing. If she's under 24 and you provide 50% or more of her support, she's part of your family. If she's over 24 you're under 24, but you provide less than 50% of their support, they're going to treat her as an independent individual. And if you had expanded Medicaid, the state would probably put her on Medicaid.
Yeah.
Okay, so do we want to be saying, gee, go get on Medicaid, don't work, and in fact you'll lose your benefits if you work and earn term wage money? Do we want to be saying that to young adults just starting out? Do we want to be saying that to graduate students?
I don't think so. Yeah.
No, but that's my whole point. So, you know, there are ways to get people with like that coverage. The problem is the Obama administration is destroying them. A lot of these people would buy short-term coverage. Well, the Obama administration says, we won't let you have short-term coverage for more than 3 months now because we're afraid you're using it as a way to get around Obamacare.
Yeah. Ed, we're going to have to leave it right here. Unfortunately, we're up against it. But thank you so much. You are brilliant and articulate, which is often rare when you get somebody on the radio. So thank you very, very much for joining us here on What Matters in North Carolina.
Thanks for having me.
All right. There you go. Ed Heitzelmeyer. And we really need to get him back on. And, oh boy, knows his stuff. Well, thanks for a great show today, our producer, Matt Calder, and thank you for listening. If you missed any of What Matters in North Carolina today or any day, go to freedomactionnetwork.com. You can find the show there and download it as a podcast. You can also find us in the iTunes and Google Play stores. Tomorrow, you don't want to miss. I'll just leave it right there. Bye.